Recordings have started.
Okay, great. One moment. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the GNSL review meeting on the 8th of June, 2017. On the call today, we do have Wolf Ulrich Novin, Sarah Bakke, Aubrey Doria, Vicki Scheckler. We have a list of apologies from John Wolf. From staff, we have Marika Cummings, Amaral Frauder, Julie Headland, and myself, Michelle Slider. I would like to remind everyone to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the meeting back over to Wolf Ulrich Novin.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. This is Wolf Ulrich Novin speaking, so I'm supposed to chair this call today. So we have, Julie has sent out an agenda. Any questions, amendments, suggestions for the agenda? I see none, so let's follow the agenda. Any further updates of SOIs anywhere? This is also not the case. Thank you. So we have then to continue discussion on recommendations 24 and 25. But before that, let me just come back. I think in between, there was a call for consensus for recommendation number 16. And that call was successful. So we have reached, as I understand from Julie, from the mailing list, that we have reached a full consensus on that. Can you confirm that, Julie?
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. This is Julie Headland from staff. Yes, there was a call for consensus, and it ended on, I think, the 29th of May, and there were no objections, so we have consensus on recommendation 16. And I'll note that we have set up a page on the wiki where we're tracking the documents that are out for consensus and those who have on which we've reached consensus, and we'll continue to track those. And there's also a summary document that indicates where we are on each of the recommendations. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Julie. So that is done. Thanks very much for that. So let's just then move on this item number 3, continue discussion on the recommendation 24 and 25. As I couldn't participate in the last call, so I have read, the recommendation and also the action items coming from that. And I saw also the updated document, Julie, but I would like to ask you if you could guide us through just from the start where you ended last time in your discussion so that we can hook on then the discussion and continue this discussion. Julie, could you do that, please?
Yes, thank you, Wolf Ulrich. This is Julie Headland from staff. So the discussion last week was on the charter for recommendations 24 and 25, and we've pulled that document up here in the Adobe Connect room. Just as a reminder, this is on the new constituency application process. Specifically, it's on making sure that the council and stakeholder groups and constituencies adhere to the published process and that the board, in assessing applications, ensures that all parties have followed this process and that applications for new constituencies, including historic applications, are all published, and that the council could consider commissioning the development and implementation of guidelines to assist groups. And just to recap, staff did do an assessment it came to and determined a number of things relating to these recommendations. So, just moving down to the solution for the implementation, And then I'll note where we've addressed some issues that were raised in the last call. So on recommendation 24, determine whether new constituency application processes are clearly posted and easily accessible. On this recommendation, there was a request to ensure that the non-commercial stakeholder group and commercial stakeholder group procedures for evaluating constituency applications are available, are posted, and to include this information in the revised charter. So if we return to the charter, we'll note that if staff did find that the new constituency processes are clearly posted, there's a link for current activities and procedures, and also a link for the historic activities, and then, as was noted previously, links to the new constituency recognition process. So that is the guidelines for how to follow the process, the application for candidacy form, the request for recognition form, and a flowchart detailing the process. The only note that staff made was that it might be helpful to have both the current historic and historic information available on one page. So in addition, at the request of the working group, and this is a new text that staff has added to the charter, at request of the working group, staff provides the following links to the procedures relating to membership in the commercial stakeholder group and the non-commercial stakeholder group. So here we have, for the commercial stakeholder group, the link to the charter. Section 2 addresses membership of the CSP. And then also there's another link on the CSG page that notes that a membership to the CSG is coordinated through membership with one of its constituencies. Please see the constituency page for more details. So as noted here, the process that a constituency is to follow for the commercial stakeholder group is the process for the applicable constituency. And so that would bring the applicant up to the page on forming new constituencies, and then the various processes. And also the constituency could also then reference the pages for the applicable constituency within that commercial stakeholder group. And then for the non-commercial stakeholder group, and I see there's a typo there, should be NCSG. Also, there's a link to the charter. Section 2.0 details the organization and membership, and then there is the membership application process link as well. So this information has been added to the charter as requested, and also the other action item from last week was that staff would determine that there are publicly available links to all constituency applications, and staff did confirm that all of the applications are publicly available at the links that are currently provided in the charter. Another action item relating to this section was for staff to provide information on how the registry and registrar stakeholder groups evaluate requests for membership, and to provide that information also to the working group, as well as to add it to the Google document where staff is tracking overarching questions. Because it's noted, staff noted in the last meeting that the constituency process relates to the process for new constituencies for the commercial stakeholder group and the non-commercial stakeholder group. I see Avri Doria has a question, so I'll pause here. Perhaps this is off topic, but why do we have a staff board-imposed process for new constituencies in the non-contracted party's house, but not in the contracted party house? I've never understood this imbalance. And actually, Avri, I think that does relate to the question that we had from last week, and that is what is the process for the registrar and registry stakeholder groups. Staff did capture those two processes and then added them to the Google Doc. I'll just put this into the notes window here, but I have to say, with respect to your question, Aubrey, I'm assuming that because of the nature of the fact that because they are contracted parties, then the application process has to be conducted via the contracted party as opposed to a separate process with the board. But frankly, I don't know the origin of why a process was created and published specifically for the non-contracted party houses, commercial stakeholder group, non-commercial stakeholder group, as opposed to specifically setting aside a page for the processes for the registrars and registries and why their processes are covered only by those parties, and that it is not then also a board-imposed process. Mm-hmm. Certainly staff can take that question back to find an answer, as I don't have the answer. I do see that we have Marika and Amr on the call. I don't know if they have any insight there, or Wolf Ulrich. I don't know if you've heard either why this was the case. I see Marika is typing here, so let us see what she has to say.
Thanks, Julie. Wolf Ulrich speaking. So I don't have an answer to that. I wasn't aware even, that there's a different different kind of process here on both sides, but that might be interesting. It's interesting, well, to know what is the rationale for that. So if there's something which you could provide, or Michael or others, so that would help us. Thanks very much. By the way, I have to say I do have a little bit problem with my Adobe Connect here, so and I don't know how to, because I can't see at first in the main screen the charter. I see the notes and the others, but sometimes it may happen that I cannot see, if someone raises his hand. So please, if that is the case and I can't follow, please raise your voice, and tell us, or Julie help me, because there is some problem here. Following well from that, what you have said on recommendation 24 and 25 so far, it seems to be so. That is to me the essence from the outcome and from what you have amended so far in the recommendations that. The work has been done so far, and the question is whether it's accepted or not. I have just, from my understanding, one question, because you are referring to all these available documents in the GNSO website with regard to the process itself and supplementing documents. Briefly looking at the process, and the question for me came then up, would it be necessary, that is the question then to the group, to dive into the process itself more deeply in with regard to, for example, the duration of the process itself or some things, or what do you think? Because I would like to get a feeling at first with regards to durations, there may be a minimum duration of the process and a maximum also, so which depending on the outcome of the different steps of the process. So it would be on the one side helpful to know, to let people know, let me say, also applicants know what they have to expect with regards to that process. So my question is there some additional work to be done? Is that something already underway on staff side, or how shall we handle that? Maybe there are other questions as well. This is just a question from my side. Maybe, Julie, you have a comment on that, or others have also additional comments or questions. It's open to the floor here, please. I don't see any hands, so I'm not sure whether there are hands.
Well, Florek, you can open. This is Julie Headland. I did raise my hand. I don't see other hands at the moment.
Okay, Julie, please.
So with respect to the diving into the process, I'm not sure if that's in scope of these two recommendations. I'm just looking back. I mean, what I'm saying is that, you know, for this working group to review the process and to, you know, to look at how long the process takes and so on, if I look at the two recommendations, the recommendation 24 relates to whether or not the applicants are adhering to the process and whether or not the board is satisfied that parties follow the process. Is that part of the process that there's an evaluation by the board that the parties are following the process? Then the other piece of the recommendation is that the applications are published and available so that the decision making is transparent. And then recommendation 25 is for the council to develop and implement guidelines to provide assistance for groups. Staff had determined that there actually are already guidelines to assist groups, leading them through the process. There's the new constituency recognition process guide. There's the form. There are the forms for the process, and then as further guidance, there's the flowchart of the process. And I'm wondering if maybe I should pull up the flowchart, and that might also give us an idea of the if that speaks to your question about the duration of the process. I just have to remind myself what's in there, but let me. See if I can quickly pull that up and put it on the screen. I'll just have to quickly save it as a PDF and put it on the screen. If that's acceptable to you, Wolf Ulrich.
Yes, it is. And this is I have it already on my screen with my own documents, and there are some indications of duration. So with regards to the evaluation periods and reaction periods and these things. So and that is gives, you know, if the case is very clear and it goes just through, then it might be a very short period. So not more than, let me say, relatively short, so a minimum period of 3 months or so. But if it comes to discussions and board ratifications going forward and backwards, then it might take a long time, big period of time. And well, I would like just to get a feeling whether this is the question, whether at all this flowchart and the process then should be checked, or whether there are some specific criteria to which they are, in which respect they should be checked, like timing and these things. So that is just my observation here. But are there any others raising their hands? So I can't see, I'm sorry. But if that is, please raise your voice.
Wolf Orkanovan, this is Julie Headland. I don't see any other hands raised. I do note that there's been, that the Marika had responded to Avery Dory's question with respect to why there is no board or staff process for the contracted party house constituency applicants as opposed to the non-contract party house. if you don't mind, perhaps I can read those responses into the transcript. Pardon me.
Sure. Go ahead, Julie, please.
Thank you. This is Julie Hedlund, and we have a comment from Marika Konings responding to why there was not a process for contracted party house constituencies. She says, my recollection is similar. Because the contracted aspect creates an automatic qualifying criteria, it was deemed not necessary to create a process. Either you have a contract and you can join through a set membership process, or you don't. Avri Doria notes, this relates to membership in the stakeholder groups, but not to the creation of constituencies. Marika says, correct. But I believe linked to that, on the contracted party side, the view was that there was no need for constituencies, as everyone is a contracted party, registry, or registrar. But to get the real insight into this, we may need to dig into history and ask those directly involved in that decision. So I guess going back to Avri, is what we provided, what Marika has provided, sufficient to answer your question, or should staff take the action to delve further? I note that this, since this is, these two recommendations relate to the board constituency process for the non-contracted party house. We could track this action and question as we did from last week as an overarching question. It's not perhaps in the scope of this particular charter, but is a question that's of interest to this working group nonetheless. So then question to the working group, to Avri in particular, would you like us as staff to look more deeply into the decision concerning contracted party house application processes?
Before Avri answers, maybe still really speaking, my comment, my understanding of, if I'm correct, Avri, so of your question is with regards to that, when it seems to me from the answer of Marika giving, that there is no process on the contracted parties house side at the time being. So the question is then, well, at all, so how are they going to, are they dealing with any discussion with regards if somebody or a group comes up in their house and trying, well, to establish their own surroundings, like, let me say, for example, dot brands or what else, or kind of things could happen. So just how this is dealt with, how they are dealing with that. So that might be of interest. So what for me, for example. But maybe I've that's not the full understanding of that, but obvious meaning. And in this regard, it is of interest. So Avri, I see your comment. I read that. They call it an interest group instead of a constituency, yes. But the NCPH is not allowed to have interest groups instead of constituencies. Yes. So... okay, what does he mean? Well, it could be, so from my point of view, it could be put to the to this extra list, Julie. I'm not sure how we should deal with it, so it's then just more a question to you toward the contracted party's house, so to find any more information. So that's what I understand. Thanks.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. So actually, there both the registry stakeholder group and the registrar stakeholder group have published procedures for their membership, and I believe in looking over them, they do address what Avri notes, that the formation of interest groups since they do not have constituencies. If you'd like, in addition to the fact that staff has pulled out the links to those membership guidelines for each of those groups, and we've put them here also into the notes. Staff could pull out the relevant sections with respect to how each stakeholder group deals with what they call interest groups. And I'm not sure if both of them, if registrars and registries both call them interest groups, but we could call out those sections if that's helpful.
Yes, this is Vavoli speaking, so I agree to that. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Move forward to them. This is Julie Headland. Perhaps I could go back to the charter. I think there was one more area where we had added text or notes based on the discussion last week. So perhaps I can pick up where we were. Looking at yes. So there's the so moving into to item number two. There was no action item from last week for number two, but just as a reminder, what was there was to determine what steps are taken to ensure compliance with those processes and whether or not those steps are adequate. Staff found that the determination of whether those steps are adequate could be via the evaluation of the applications. One could evaluate the applications received thus far, and in particular, an example was the PIA-CC application where an evaluation was conducted and it was determined that particular candidate did not meet the required criteria. So here was an example of a constituency not being accepted. And this also ties into the question that that staff brought forward for this working group to consider, and that is a particular aspect of recommendation 24, which says that whether or not it's the question of whether or not there is a presumption of admission, the default outcome, and whether or not that presumption is appropriate. Just looking back up again to recommendation 24, just to remind ourselves, that the ICAM board, in assessing an application, satisfy itself that all parties have followed the public process, subject to which the default outcome is that a new constituency is admitted. And then the question that was raised by the GNSO review working party was whether or not this presumption of a default outcome was appropriate. I mean, is it, since we do have a process for evaluating constituencies and constituencies have to meet that process and that's a requirement, it appeared to staff that there is not a presumption of admission, that the process doesn't appear to be subject to the default outcome. That is that if the board or the stakeholder group deems that the applicant has not met the criteria, then the default outcome does not apply. The applicant can fail the process. And I know, Wolf Ulrich, you had made a note that you also agreed that it did not seem presumptive since the board could ratify or reject a candidacy. So the question for this working group that we raised from the previous call is, does this working group feel that it's appropriate that the default outcome would not apply, or that the decision is not subject to the default outcome, meaning that the constituency, even if it follows the procedure, if it does not meet the criteria, it may not be accepted as a constituency.
Mm. Yeah, thanks for the explanation, Julie. That was the second point we have to come to. With regard to the question of presumption. My last question is with regard to the point we just discussed before, this site question or additional question from Avi. So that is taken here into the notes, I understand, yeah? That is one thing, yeah?
Yes, that's correct. We've taken on that action item to build out some more information into the separate question Google document, and that relates to the procedures for why there are no procedures from the board for this the contracted party house, and also what are the procedures for so-called interest groups in the contracted party house.
Okay, I would like just to be sure of that. Thanks very much. So then, coming to this question of the presumption or of the outcome of the process. That was just my take from that. So when I saw the process and the flow chart, but maybe there is something more behind, and I would like now to give the floor to anybody who would like to chime in here and have an opinion on that, or a feeling, or what should be done, or is it how you see that? Is there anybody who would like to raise his hands, her hands in this regard? So if not, Julie, what is the could be the result if we say yes or no, or take it as it is here? What is the impact on the work having been done or to be done still?
This is Julie Hedlund from staff. So as staff understands it, there are two options. Then this working group could agree that or could decide that it is appropriate that there is not a presumption of acceptance of an application, that it's appropriate that there is an evaluation process, that even if the applicant follows the process, if the applicant does not meet the criteria, and is deemed then not to have met the criteria as a constituency, either by the stakeholder group in its evaluation process or by the board, this working group could decide that that's appropriate. Alternatively, if this working group decided that that it is not appropriate that an applicant could follow the process but perhaps not meet the criteria but still must be accepted as a constituency by the board or by the stakeholder group. I think from a staff point of view, that's sort of the two options. And I see that Lori Shulman has her hand up.
Yes, Lori, please go ahead.
Yes. Hi, I have some thoughts about this. They're not fully baked. I didn't raise my hand before, but I think just in the interest of discussing this topic, because I actually was part of a group that went through getting certified, or whatever you call it, about 6 years ago through the constituency process. And not having a default, if you fill out the forms and then you're subjected to a test phase, where is the bar in terms of this idea of participating in policy development activities? Because there's such a broad range of participation. And what does that really mean? Does that mean you're speaking? Does that mean you've actually drafted something? Does that mean you've got to wait till the end of an entire PDP to figure out whether or not a new constituency is effective, which could be years? I think there's some perils with not having objective criteria that once you meet those in, otherwise it becomes very subjective in terms of effectiveness or active. You know, what is there a floor or a ceiling on active? I see a lot of pitfalls in that. But at the same time, I understand there's a danger in default, and you don't want to make it so easy that constituencies proliferate all over the place without a real commitment to ICANN's mission. And I'm not sure, but if you ask me to say something today about it, I would say that the idea of active participation is just too loose.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Laurie. When you were referring to your own process, so some years ago, so there have been questions at that time. Was it questions just for yourself, for the applicant in this regard? So how to fulfill these criteria? What is behind of that? What is meant with that? Or was it some outs throughout the discussion with the organization itself here when it came to the approval process, and in a common understanding of the criteria? Are you missing some criteria, or is the understanding of the criteria so different that you may be of the opinion that there should be some work to be done? That's a question to you, Laurie. Understand?
Yeah. Ulrich, I will also reveal. I was in the beginning of the process. Toward the end of the process, I was ill. So the final stages of the approval, I was actually in the beginning stages of approval, where there was a lot of documentation, a lot of discussion, a lot of back and forth, which was useful. I can't speak directly to whether or not at the end of the phase, you know, at the end of the application process where, you know, I don't know if Rafiq were involved in the discussions about the MPOC formation or not. They might actually have better insight, but I could certainly look back or ask those who were involved, because those who were involved, interestingly enough, most of them are not involved in MPOC anymore. So that's also an interesting thing about the formation of the constituency. Sometimes the biggest movers in the beginning may end up not being the long-term members of a group. So I don't know. I just think it's an interesting point to think of. It's been a long time since I've looked at the criteria. That's why I'm a little hesitant to speak directly to them. But I can certainly look back and ask and see what the impressions were. Because I think MPOC was the last constituency forum, if I'm right, in the GNSO.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks. Julie?
Thank you, Wolf-Horst. This is I see Aubrey Doria has her hand up. I'll defer to Aubrey.
Oh, thanks. This is Aubrey speaking. No need to defer to me, but since you did. In fact, MPOC is the only new constituency, and those rules grew out of the stress and tension at the time of trying to create a new constituency. At the time, what is now the non-commercial stakeholder group wanted to remain just a stakeholder group with interest groups, but that was contraindicated by other powers that be within ICANN that we should have a new constituency, and therefore those rules were part of a year-long, very torturous process of trying to accommodate the need for a group that said they wanted a constituency and had strong backing from people in other stakeholder groups for a constituency, and a stakeholder group that wanted to just do interest groups and remain a coherent stakeholder group, very much as the registry stakeholder group managed to achieve several years later when they said, no, we don't really want to do constituencies, we want to do interest groups. They succeeded at that, we failed at that. So that's part of why we're left in this imbalance, and that's part of why we have a set of rules that were created and have only been used once. And actually, it's not true. There were another couple applicants that didn't make it through the process, largely because they weren't, you know, just purely non-commercial versus also being commercial or something like that. I don't think there's been any attempt to form a constituency in the commercial stakeholder group, only within the non-commercial. So, but yeah, that is the only one that's ever made it through the process is MPOC, and that's because they were at the creation of the process, and it was pretty much created to make their creation possible. Thanks.
Thanks, Avi. So I think, well, the history is clear about that, and there was also a question here in the review whether the it's transparent enough, you know, for the to look at the historical applications and the processes. So the question here is then also, and I just took that from the recommendations here from the review. Under number six, the question, if there are any proposal suggestions for amendments or in the process itself, but whatever that means with regards to the procedural things or with regards to criteria or what else. If there are wishes, requests for that to be seen, so it should be put together then, and we should give an answer to that. But before I do, I saw Lois, you had your hand up, but okay, no, it's not.
Yeah, I did. I was wondering, because as I said, I was in there at the beginning, and I am quite confident of the stress and the intention that Avi refers to. As I said, I was in the beginning of the process, and disclosure, I had cancer at the end, and that's why I didn't participate. Otherwise, I would have. But that being said, at the time, I remember being in a lot of the calls, a lot of the discussions remotely.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if we set the bar so high that it creates a deterrent for others to try to create new constituencies, and whether or not that's a good thing, because it keeps the system entrenched in a way that maybe we don't want it so entrenched. Maybe we do need it to be more flexible and evolutionary. I mean, I think these are critical questions to think about. I mean, right now, the GNSO, the way it's designed, there's, in some ways, there's balance, and in other ways, there's imbalance. And I think it's worth thinking about. You know, do we want to make it so hard for people? And are we doing it because, and I'm not calling out any group, I'm saying any entrenched group, whether it's on the commercial side, the non-commercial side, the contracted side, the non-contracted side, is it a good idea to keep things the way they are? I mean, now we have new bylaws. It's basically the bylaws itself entrenched this structure. So maybe the answer is, well, unless the way they are in the GNSO. But I don't know if that's so good for ICANN in the long run, because I think that
okay,
this process should be inclusive, not exclusive.
Thanks very much, Lori. So I think that is in a certain kind of interrelated to to what was missing this in this GNSO review, that the structural side and the part, the discussion about that, which you all know. And that may be on a different page and to be discussed either with a future review or a kind of or a structural review, which is under discussion since several time, you know. And I think here, so we can just refer to what was from the outcome of this review to the recommendations we had and the question whether this process is as it is under these circumstances, then transparent enough, and whether there should be do some repairments to that process or not. The question for me is then, but I can give at first Rafik before I sum up this one, try to sum up. And Rafik, I see your hand.
Okay, thanks. So I wanted to comment to what I heard from Lori. So I think this set of criteria, even if they look kind of maybe high, I think they have a value in that it's more easy to create a constituency than to disband one. I don't think that happened ever, or it will happen anytime soon. So I think that it's quite important when we accept to have a new constituency within GNSO, so with all that the fragile balance we have there, is to ensure that they will be active. And I think the experience for NPOC and for the people involved in NPOC, they faced several issues in terms of how they had to grow and to find their mission and why they are within GNSO. Even their leadership changed several times in a few years. That doesn't really kind of, the best way to evolve. They are evolving, maybe, but it raises all the kind of issues that any new constituency will face. And so it's important to have a high bar in the beginning. At NCAG, we had three applications, and with the different level of, progress. NPOC, it was the most successful because they were created. But we have the consumer constituency where even the proponent disappeared totally at the end of the process and nobody kind of followed up. So we have the cyber cafe case that raises another problem. They are commercial, non-commercial, where they see it within the GNSO with the current structure we have. So those criteria, maybe they can get it improved. And the way the process, how it's designed, I think it helps the applicant to elaborate and develop. I recall when we did the review, there was some issues like about diversity, some like applicant, they were bringing mostly their kind of membership from only one region. So there are those issues that can rise, and that process helped the applicant, the candidate applicant, to elaborate and improve the application. So that's, I think, my understanding, and that's all the process. I know that it's kind of painful, it's long, but we have how the GNSO is designed now, it's kind of really fragile. You add a new player, and so it changes a lot of dynamics. And we forget at the end there is something that is even more complicated, is how you will kind of allocate the seats in that matter. For example, at NCAG level, kind of solve the issues that we said that the council representation is via the stakeholder group. So that allow less, problem in that regard. So.
Thanks very much, Rafik, for this. I think we have file. Well, we have to some extent discussed that. Well, the feasibility of the existing process, and so that is okay. I was just wondering, Julie, where we are right now with regards to open questions here with the with respect to these both recommendations. Now, is the to my understanding, so the question of presumption of an outcome of this process is not deemed so important in the discussion. How do you see that? So what do we still need as to consider as open questions here? Julie, please.
Yes, thank you, Wolf. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. So we've had now some discussion in two meetings on this question of presumption of admission. I think staff is hearing that there does not seem to be a presumption. I mean, not base. I mean, there is, because there is an evaluation process, and as has been shown, an applicant can fail the evaluation by not meeting the criteria. That has happened, and yet it appears, at least to staff, that there is some support for there being an evaluation process, as long as it's not too onerous. And so there are published criteria. Staff had briefly now just brought up the criteria, you know, so that we could see what those are. You know, we've had some who are concerned that if the bar is too high, is this a deterrent? But others, like Rafiq, who've noted that there needs to be some bar, not just a presumption that if the process is followed that a constituency would be accepted, because there needs to, you know, we need to ensure that they are going to be active and grow and have, you know, have a mission. And so it's important to have at least some kind of bar. So I think that what we could possibly do if this working group agrees is staff could accept the changes that are in the document now, but also put in some text indicating that the working group has discussed the issue of the presumption of a default outcome and has determined that it's appropriate that there is some evaluation criteria, and that because there is an evaluation process, it cannot be presumed that an applicant that simply follows the process but does not meet the criteria, it cannot be presumed that applicant would be accepted. And so we could put out a revised version of this charter calling out that text, and see if there's consensus around that text and the charter in general. So suggesting that we could do a call for consensus on this charter, particularly given that in both of these calls there have been a small number of people participating, and so it might be good to get the consensus call out to the list and see if there are any objections or concerns.
Thanks, Julie. Well. Anyway, that's right. Well, because of participation, any consensus calls should be shared within the constituencies. Well, for distributing the information as far as possible. I personally would agree to do so. And we should have. We should see then the very last version of the draft charter then in that, and if you would like to circulate that, I wouldn't say directly as consensus for that, but just because with your new language, just circulate that after the meeting, and then, well, if there are, let me say, no comments in between, then you will, after a week or so, then call for a consensus that to do so. so. But maybe that some constituencies may have some input put to give. So it's not clear to me whether it's still already consensus or not. So I would say just a small step in between to send it out and then ask for a comment, and then afterwards we go for a consensus call. We could in between then, but by the next time, because the time is just gone, then start immediately with the other recommendations, with charters for 10 and 11 recommendation in order to continue that. Well, if I don't see any further hand, or is this Julie, is this your hand, please? Yeah, I see your hand.
Oh. Sorry, this is Julie. I did not have my hand up, but I do. Action to, we'll revise the wording as you indicate, and we'll call that out in red line. We'll put the document out, circulate it for comments for a week, and then if there are no comments, then we'll initiate a call for consensus, and then we'll note also, we'll send around again the charter for recommendations 10, 11, and we can do initiate discussion on the list on that charter, hopefully then have some discussion going prior to the next call on the 22nd.
Mm, yes. That's good. That's a good plan to do so. Well, we have just arrived at the end. Well, are there any other questions, any comments, any A or B? To that, I see a very last comment from Avi in the chat. A presumption of acceptance would be hard for everyone, but even harder for CSG, as that would change the number of seats each of the existing constituencies could hold, since council seats in CSG are based on an CSG-wide selection process. Its model can support a multitude of constituencies if they match the conditions without any chance change to council seating, except there through elections on the SG level. Yes, Avi, I understand you are advertising for SG views, and well, there are pros and cons and problems. Okay, accepted. So, thank you very much for participation. And Julie, thank you very much for preparing. And the next call shall be in 2 weeks from now, same time. It's just the week before the ICANN meeting. Thank you very much, and bye.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Wolf Ulrich, for chairing also. And oh, and I'm just noting, Lori is asking to send the criteria for forming a constituency, a link to the criteria, and staff will send that along with the revised document as well. And no, Rafiq, there is no meeting in Johannesburg since we're meeting just the week before. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone. Operator, would you mind stopping the recording for us and disconnect all remaining lines? Have a great day, everyone.